Hey, well, welcome everybody. Good afternoon. Thank you for attending. So we got a few things under new business we wanted to just briefly go over today. So just a quick update, the airport consultation process that was completed. Out of that, there was a recommendation of the airport master plan. We did apply for a grant and we weren't eligible. So council has deferred that for the 2025 budget deliberations. So we'll be putting in that request again this fall with council and recommending that they move forward with an airport master plan. And as we said to council, you know, a master plan basically is, it basically sets the framework for decision making, and we really feel that we need a master plan at the airport for many reasons. So we'll see where that goes this fall.
I'm just wondering if you should adopt the agenda in the middle
of the first one. Yeah, can we adopt the agenda? Well, thank you. Quit laughing.
We have a first and a second.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay, now can I carry on?
And then it's the minutes.
Can we approve the minutes?
I move.
Pretty good.
Ryan, am I second there? Yes? Okay, great. Thank you.
I was just so excited to get started. I overlooked that. Thank you, Brad.
You're welcome.
Three, I guess, yeah, the Avgas fuel system. So they transferred some fuel, approximately 5,000 liters. They're there today working on it. They will run it for a couple of days. They'll keep the other system online until they're confident that everything is working well. And then they will decommission the old one. And the plan is next week, from what I understand, they're going to start removing the in-ground, the old in-ground tank and infrastructure. So we're really pleased with, you know, the new system and more specifically the company that's, you know, Western Oil, they're doing a pretty stellar job. So, yeah, so just to give you an update on that. And, of course, that's a 30,000-liter system, right?
And the loan's twice as much.
Yeah. So we have 10 more thousand capacity there, which is really good. So
they don't anticipate any downtime between the chambers. Like minutes,
yeah. So it's pretty much seamless. So this morning we had a call with a engineer, Tetra Tech Engineering. They've been awarded the contract for the runway taxiway rehabilitation project. So they went over the documents. Just to give you a briefing on it, what they did is a couple of months ago they came in and they did a complete survey of the areas. In addition to that, they did some coring. They did approximately 8 core samples. And what they found, most of it's in good condition in terms of base, but down at 29 end, on the east end, not so much. It's a little soft for a base. And we kind of knew that just looking at the amount of cracks, surface cracking that's happened over the years and the tunneling there. So, but they have a remedy for that. So we went over all that this morning, had a pretty good discussion, and they will return another document for further discussion with us in about a week's time, and then we'll finalize the documents, and we'll have that submitted to the ACAP program by June the 1st. So next step is what I just said, and then it's a waiting game from there, probably in the spring of 2025, March, April-ish, they will get back to us whether we are successful or not. If we are successful, then the process will move forward in terms of awarding a contract and moving that forward. If we're not successful, then it just stays in the hopper, so to speak, and they'll look at it the following year. If we are successful, we went over it, Jeff was there as well. You know, there's approximately about a month's work there, the engineer figured. And we'll work on it, plan, so to speak, so that there's minimal disruption, but there will be obviously some disruption at the airport. A lot of the work can be done in the evening hours. Some may not be able to. So again, we don't know what that looks like, but as this rolls out, if we are successful, then we will definitely be sharing that with everybody and you know, well in advance of what that scope of work will look like for that rehabilitation.
So you don't think it'll be like Powell River where they close the line right for 2 months or whatever it is?
Not at this point, no. We you know, our discussions this morning led to not doing that. You know, Jeff spoke to it, was very clear that, you know, the minimal, you know, the least disruption is, you know, is preferred, so.
Do you know what month it is?
Well, yeah. It would be in the summertime.
It would.
And do the work at night.
Yeah, be in the summertime.
Kevin, the only issue would be you guys, that end of 29 is not an overlay, but a rehabilitation. And so at the end of 29, we don't have how much of it yet, but there will be a, we'll take a number, 1,500 feet. I have no idea where that'll be down for a week to 10 days. So there will be a display threshold, but no landing before. So that's something I want to talk to you about is what a Navajo can handle. Once they start, no Nayoks, obviously, that's not big deal. Because they'll kind of turn off or displays the threshold and stuff like that. So it's just a little bit east of the Delta intersection. From there to the end of 29, we'll be down for over a week. Permanently all day, all night, probably tear it right up and take down. So that's something to think about and we'll talk about it later. But for everybody else, worst case, you're going to get 2,500 foot run.
Am I using my dart, or do you need my
spot? That's probably at 10 o'clock, but I'm guessing.
Okay.
I'm almost closing time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. A little premature at this point, and so, you know,
we'll get the funding approved.
We're going to get the funding approved, and then we'll come up with a proper plan, right?
Yeah. They're going to do so many hundred meters, completely finish it, paint it, and then next time the next one. Now, it may not be 100% up to code, but it will be usable. So we'll never have a runway that's not usable, except for you, Kevin, that first bit of 29. And that'll also include the last bit of Alpha. Both of those areas are what Kevin was mentioning are not in as good a shape as the rest of the airport.
Yeah, whether they stay 100 to 200 meters a night, they can do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both sides. Yeah, doing their thing. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. So. Anyway, any questions on that?
Yeah. Just for thinking on that, Jeff, would the displaced threshold area, like say Alpha, would be available if Delta was not? Because that would kind of even out the distances a little bit.
Missing something there.
Well, because you've got the displaced threshold on Alpha, right? So that's about...
I mean, Alpha, the last bit of Alpha will be closed.
Okay. No, but if you did it separately, then we could use that as a temporary part of the runway instead of it being displaced, that would help a little bit. But we can talk about that.
Yeah. Bottom line is you're going to lose 1,000 feet of the runway. Maybe not. Maybe 800. I don't know. They're going to give us that number later this week or next.
Okay, well, we'll just discuss it better.
Yeah. But it'll be the big thing for all of that was it currently displays threshold to call it, and everybody has short out. You won't be able to because it will be unusable. It won't be a runway. It'll be all chewed up, pavement. So that's something we're going to keep getting the word out to all the users. You guys will be dealing with a shorter runway. Everybody's going to be dealing with you cannot land short of the displacement, which has always been the case around here. It's never been a problem. Anyway, just something to keep in the back of your mind for now. Okay. Well done.
So the other thing under the ACAP program that we're eligible for, and we've applied, so for some equipment replacements, so a new loader, snow blower, and some attachments. So we submitted that last week, and we received confirmation that they've received it. And with that, we are eligible, and they'll let us know in March of 2025. It's about $800,000 in change that we're eligible for an airport our size. So, you know, that's a fair chunk of money, and we want to see if we can, get that to get some new equipment. You know, we have that little farm tractor with a farm snowblower, and we find that it's just not efficient, right? I mean, last year when we had that foot of snow overnight, we were down for a week, as you guys may recall, right? And it's just not efficient, right? So, you know, we don't get a lot of snow over the winter, but when we do get it, as everybody knows, we tend to get it. And so the new equipment, we're due for it. So we'll see where that goes.
Have you considered, looking at some of the new equipment out there where you can get, multi-use attachments, sweeper attachments and all that, just to help with breaking up that compact snow that we get down here?
Yeah, so for an airport our size, we're not eligible for that type of equipment. There are pull-behind sweepers, and maybe that's what you're referring to, and different things, I'm not sure.
I can give you the spec of the one we've got. They've got one that they use at YVR right now, and they actually use it for the baggage areas, and it's a small unit, but it's actually rated for use on surface areas, and it's quite handy.
Is it a tow-behind unit?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can send me the information.
Okay.
I'll see, but just at a glance, looking at the criteria, those types of equipment are listed for larger airports, not airports our size.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. By all means, forward it on. We'll take a look at it.
Okay.
There has been some discussion about pilot access in the main terminal. So as everybody knows, we've got the apron there, and on the northwest corner, we've got that small gate leads to the parking lot. Often the terminal will be locked, and there's no opportunity for pilots to use a washroom or anything like that. So kind of wanted to flush that out today if we could with everybody and get some thoughts. We certainly have been discussing it at our end. There's some opportunities to maybe provide a code into the terminal, and that would be through that access door on the northwest side of the terminal, right? Not the main terminal where the air carrier uses for passengers, but the other doors that lead down that hallway and around the corner into the washroom area. So, we've got a code system already in place, and we can actually activate that. From what I understand, we could set a time limit on it, for example. So just for discussion's sake, we could activate it, 7 days a week from 8 a.m. in the morning to, let's say, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that, right? So there is an opportunity, and we feel that we should look at that opportunity and see what we can do, because we have heard from pilots and whatnot that, we do have limited access there. Keeping in mind anything we do, we have to, safety and security is paramount. But the other thing that we don't have is we don't have very good signage up there either. So when somebody lands at QB, right, they're not familiar, they have really no directional signage on where to go, right? So, where do you go? People ask, where's your washrooms and stuff like that. So there's some things that we need to improve on. So any thoughts on that?
Well, I've got a few thoughts on it. You and I walked the airport, Kevin, and I think you kind of got my thoughts that having access to the terminal building to pilots off the main ramp, every airport does have that to an extent. I'm starting to see less and less of it because of security. I still have a huge concern about people walking in behind me when I'm starting up airplanes and I'm coming towards that door when I, you know, there's just no way of controlling anybody on the ramp there. So if they are funneled off towards the gate access, if they're parked on the ramp, then that to me is a safer scenario than actually coming all the way to the terminal building. You know, that's the only part that I have a problem with. I think you and I also discussed having a pilot gate that's actually by the flying club. I believe that that's probably more important than actually the terminal, because most of the overnight and interim pilots have to carry bags all the way from the parking lot all the way to the flying club because they can't get in to the tie-down area. So, you know, we need multiple accesses that are pilot-friendly, that's for sure. You know, and the flying club could serve as an interim point for washrooms and that sort of stuff as well, if it was available. If they, you know, that's part of the flying club agenda for interim pilots. So, but that's my thoughts. I, you know, also on a security side, I don't know how we've been instructed that every time we leave the terminal building, if there's nobody there, say on Mondays and Tuesdays, we have to turn the alarm on. So if you have a code system and we leave at 10 o'clock in the morning for an hour and we have to turn the alarm on, you're probably going to get some false hits as soon as somebody walks in through that door, right? Because they don't have alarm codes. So that's a problem.
Again, this is now a final approach thing as well. Obviously, they have liquor and type you for great injuries in. They're not up there.
They do. It's a pretty secure system when they're not there.
Yeah.
And so the place locks up. One of the issues is we can't open the terminal without somebody like yourself, Kevin, or the restaurant. Otherwise, it's open to, you know, there's no security there. That's no good.
But like we read it because obviously we're there, you know, on Monday and Tuesday when the terminal's closed, and so we do see during the summertime, particularly, you know, visiting pilots are like, oh, where do we go?
Yeah.
I usually try to direct them down to the flying club because Sea Land at least is usually there, and so they're able to, you know, give them access to a bathroom or something like that or whatever. They're usually disappointing on the comfort of their whole suit and things like that, but, you know, whatever. But,
so definitely an improved signage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, wayfinding, directing people where to go, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's tough because, like, a lot of people will show up and they haven't planned in advance. If they haven't checked to see if the terminal's open.
Yeah.
You know, that information's available.
Well, on our side, we have customer service basically Monday to Friday and or Sunday to Friday, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So there is somebody typically in the terminal here those days. But we're also not, as a company, we don't want to be the administrator of who gets in the terminal and who gets out on the ramp and all that sort of stuff either, right? Like, if we let the wrong person out and something happens, who's liable, right? Like, I don't know.
You would never be asked to let anybody out, or for that matter, let anybody in. What we're looking at is the other door, the door to the west of the main entrance, the one the staff use right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the pilot entrance, you code it, 1228, or to get in, you could just walk in. Most airports are like that. And then you need the code to get back out. It would be similar to a man gate, except it would let you into the terminal. The issue is you'd have to disconnect that whole system during the time that the terminal was not occupied. You would be considered an occupant, and therefore we'd open it up. When you go home at 4, as you mentioned, the restaurant would take over that. I don't think we're suggesting that you guys act as security, just that you're there.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like the restaurant on Mondays and Tuesdays, let's just use those, for example, Adam and those guys are in and out of the airport all the time, so they're not there they're doing some prep work for a couple of hours. Sometimes they show up at 8, sometimes they show up at 10. So we're typically here from 9 to 4, but say one of our staff has to run down to get the mail or something like that, so there's nobody in the terminal building, we're instructed that we have to turn the alarm off.
Identifying is the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem. What do we do with the alarm, right? Like that, I mean...
The terminal, if the terminal is not let's say, occupied by somebody we know, like yourself or the restaurant, then should we have it open to anybody? A guy shows up at 8 o'clock at night and there's nobody there. Should he be able to walk in on a Monday morning or a Monday, sorry, when the restaurant's closed, you guys are gone? Then what?
I don't think that's appropriate, to be honest with you, with the stuff that, you know, we have computers and the restaurant's got liquor and stuff that's not secured except for a little lock at the door. I don't know. I don't think it's going to work. I think it's a pretty high risk.
Well, and again, the intent is just to open up the floor for discussion to get this type of feedback, right?
Yeah.
Because the question has been raised, right?
So. Pitt Meadows, you walk in, Victoria Farm Club, you walk in, and then you need to get out. I don't know what they do off hours, because I've only been there during normal hours. Foundry Bay, I believe you can walk in, and then you need to go get out. I can't remember. It's been a couple of years since I've been there.
Actually, you can't. At Boundary Bay Terminal, you can't get out without being escorted out. You can go in, but you can't get out. That's typical. That's the problem that I'm thinking is, if we bring people in, how do we get them out?
Well, maybe at the very least, then what we should be looking at, like you say, is some improved signage. And that's easily done, right? I mean, we don't even have any signage on the gate. So no, you know, we had two gents come in this morning for coffee, as advertised over the Flying Club. They didn't know where the Flying Club was, right? So that's pretty low-hanging fruit. We can look at, improving some signage and stuff like that.
That's a big sign over the Flying Club.
That's
a pretty big sign over your guys.
Mm-hmm. Unless they were like way up
high.
Yeah.
The Flying Club put that on some aviation website. You know, so that, hey, coffee and coffee, went to one, and off they went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they're up top. The
Flying Club generated that. So they need to put more information into it. Come to our end. Mm-hmm. The green mark. There's a thing that says Flying Club above it. It's private.
Well, my thought, though, is we already have a man gate, like, next to the airport terminal hangar, right? And that's, I mean, you could gate that and lock that, and people would have easier access. But I see the number one thing, like, I just see a lot of people having to walk their bags all the way from the tie-down area all the way to the parking lot, because that's the only place you can get out of this airport, unless you go through the Flying Club.
Remember, it's private property.
No, but I mean, if somebody goes and ties down an airplane at...
That doesn't give them any free rides to the Flying Club.
That's what I'm saying, is that's the only place you can get off the airport property.
Other than the man gate up.
The man gate way up at the top.
There's a discussion that of moving that man gate closer to the terminal. So
that could be like there's a man gate.
I mean, that's just a 30-second extra walk.
I think what's Kevin's suggesting is, can we put another man gate down where the Flying Club is?
Yeah, a coded man gate.
That's
easy enough. Yeah.
Well, that may keep people off of the ramp and trying to walk. Like, I see people walking through the ramp from the main, you know, like from the tie-down areas across in front of me while I'm starting up airplane engines, which is also a problem, because they can't get off the airport terminal without walking by the terminal. And of course, then they try to get in the gate, the door of the terminal, but it's locked, so then they have to keep walking.
Sure. Yeah, we can look at that, Kevin. We can look at that. And again, with that, we'll need to have some, you know, we should have some signage around that as well, right? Okay.
If most people are using it for the bathroom, have you guys thought of just having like an outdoor porta potty service? Imagine that. Like, if that's like the prime reason people are using, it's going to be the bathroom.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, outdoor.
The restaurant's not closed, or it's closed, they don't need to go there.
Yeah.
They brought an airplane in, they don't need to get
in. I mean, right now, like, literally, people are just peeing by the credit card.
Oh, and why should I do that on camera?
Yes, of course. I'm so high.
But it wasn't, you're right, a portable toilet.
This is a porta potty
that's
cheaper than security or anything like that. It's a porta potty. At least it's something. And
yeah.
Okay. I think Kevin's on the money though. I think good more signage would make life a lot easier from people, because every day I tell at least 4 or 5 people while I'm here. I don't allow them to go out the door or come in the door. We're a little stringent on that because I want them to go get the code, because then we have to let them out because they don't have the code. So if we let them in, they don't have the code. So even though letting them in is not a big deal. But
no signs there at all. There's nothing. You get out of your plane on the apron and you go, where do I go? Logically, you go to the main terminal.
Absolutely.
Now we're open.
Yeah, then we let them in, or somebody lets them in, and then they don't have a code to get back out. So,
okay,
that's the problem. I mean, most airports have a man gate, an easy man gate, pretty much next to the terminal building, right on the side of it. Like, I mean, Victoria, even next to the main terminal, that's where we used to take passengers through. Right next to the main terminal building, there's a man gate that you could avoid, like, the security area. I mean, most have it.
Nanaimo still have theirs by the FSS?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And right behind the, right, that's where we take our passengers out when we go to Nanaimo, right next to the fueling station at, next to the terminal building. Yeah. So we can avoid the secured area.
Okay.
There you go. Put that one to death. Thanks, everybody. That was a good discussion.
So the other thing that has come out of, you know, part of the consultation process that they went through was, you know, some of the things we were hearing is that, you know, the town doesn't listen, or, you know, the airport doesn't care, or, you know, you're not a very good neighbor, you know, noise often comes up. That's generally one of the biggest complaints we get. Different things like that, right? So what we did as a result of that is the town has created a better and a much more improved process for, and we call it inquiries, right? So if somebody has a complaint with the town of any kind, could be on the roads, could be anything, or it could be, in this case, for the airport, they go on the website, there's a form, there's a drop-down, you click on airport, it prompts you through, and, you know, you put in your address, your name and your address, you know, what type of inquiry. So noisy plane, for an example, over Qualcomm West, just for an example, right? And they push send, and it comes to us as staff. We review it. First thing we'll do is we'll go to our CCTV footage to see if we can pick up the plane. We'll determine from there if there was a violation. For an example, was there a violation on a turn to the north with the noise abatement procedure, or what was it, right? 99% of the time, there is no violation. What we'll do is, thank you very much, we'll put our explanation to it, we'll send it back, and then we will complete the file, okay? So the person that sent it in, they get that correspondence back with our explanation. You know, most of the time they're happy with it, sometimes they're not. And if they're not, they can go and put in another inquiry, and it just repeats the process. The good thing is what it does in behind the scenes for us is there's a tracking tool behind it. So it identifies problem and we call them hotspots. So I'll use Baltimore for an example. That's one of our biggest hotspots, right? Meaning that most of our inquiries will be coming out of Baltimore. Some of that also comes out of Chartwell, for an example, right? Okay? But what it tells us is it tracks us. It tracks addresses and things like that. And it shows us what is the majority of the complaints. Where are they coming from, right? Okay. So we've been able to look at that and say, okay, well, we do know that most pilots, when turning to the south, when safe to do so, most pilots will turn east of the railway tracks when safe to do so, right? Okay. And that's what, you know, that's what we recommend, right? We also know that
that's up to the pilot, right? You know, you're dealing with it, you're flying the plane, the aircraft, and you've got to make those decisions, right? So it's not an enforceable regulation by no means. The NAV, on the other hand, is an enforceable regulation. So if there's a violation with the NAV, then we will write the registered owner of that aircraft a letter. Nice little letter comes from my office. We send it off and asking for compliance. Since I've been here, we haven't sent anything to Transport Canada. We do have that option to do that, but we would prefer to send the letter to the registered owner for compliance. And we haven't experienced a repeat, right? And we get very few of those. I think this year, Jeff, we have one or two violations on the NAP. And what we found was, Buddy was from Pitt Meadows or somewhere else on the Lower Mainland, and, you know, obviously didn't look at the CFS the way they should have, and there was a violation. So be it. So with that said, what we've decided to do, and we're hoping that this committee will endorse it, we've put together a draft Good Neighbor Program, okay? And we want to show that to you today. And basically, what we did was we did some research. Pitt Meadows has one, right? Basically, what it speaks to is basically about being a good neighbor, right? And a good neighbor can work both ways, right? Whether it's residents or whether it's, you know, the Air Force stakeholders, you know, it works both ways. But anyway, we want to go through it today, get your thoughts on it. We've drafted it out, and we'll go through it. So basically, this is how it starts. Can everybody see it?
Yep.
Okay. Next slide. Okay.
I just want to get these out of the way. I don't know how.
I mean, I don't have to read it unless everybody wants me to. So basically, it starts out with noise mitigation, right, at Cat 4, right? Okay. And again, we're asking for the committee's endorsement on this. Okay. Right. Next slide. So often we talk about the airport authority. And what is the airport authority? Well, it's staff that are responsible for the airport and to ensure that the regulations under TC are being, being done correctly. So, you know, it goes from the accountable executive, which is our CAO, airport manager, which is myself, the deputy airport manager, Mr. Graham, and then our public works utility person, which is Casey Smith. Okay? So that basically is what makes up the airport authority. Because we talked about it in this document, right? So next slide. So good neighbor principles. Associated with the good neighbor program, noise mitigation procedures will be evaluated for safety and effectiveness, right? And again, that gets back to, you know, turns to the south when safe to do so, right? I mean, we don't have to tell you guys you're responsible for your own safety. We're not responsible for that. So, but, you know, matters of noise mitigation will be discussed biannually or as required at the AUC and with commercial helicopter operators, fixed wing operators, and scheduled commercial carriers. Next slide. So we talked a little bit about the history of the airport. I mean, it's 70 years. It's been here for 70 years. So everybody knows that there was no buildup of any residential areas in those days, right? It was all farms. But nonetheless, it's been here for 70 years. We know that it's closed between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. You know, and the opportunities that it provides. Next slide. This talks about who is there, you know, the flying club, air cadets, search and rescue and whatnot. Operates both day and night. This includes takeoffs, departures, approaches, landings, and normal flight systems. Right? Typical of any airport. So this is what we put together. And as you can see, you know, the Good Neighbor Program recommends and encourages pilots to support and conform to a set of best operational flight procedures, which helps to mitigate noise disturbances within the surrounding communities. So, as part of our recommendation, this is a normal flight circuit, as you guys know, and 99.9% of people are using this, unless they're going elsewhere, right? So, we put it down as a recommendation because what we want to be able to demonstrate with this is, again, you guys know what you're doing, but this tool is not only for airport stakeholders, but it's for the community at large. Because the community has been saying, well, you know what, like I said earlier, the town or the airport hasn't been listening to us. And we're saying, well, you know what, we have. And this is what we've put together, okay? And what this demonstrates is that, you know what, our pilots and stakeholders, they are compliant. They are respectful. You know, they're not going out there and dive bombing houses or anything like that. Yeah, you laugh, but that's some of the complaints we get, right? And we're, you know, that's just ludicrous, right? That's just not happening, right? So this is why we put this together. And what it shows is, again, you know, South Ferns, east of the railway, and, you know, as part of the noise-sensitive areas, we stay away from, the farm and whatnot, like that. So next slide. So, during departures and arrivals, follow safe procedures to minimize noise impacts over populated areas, right? So just speak to that, right? Next slide. This is, as everybody knows, this is published, it talks about right-hand circuits, it talks about noise sensitive areas, as that sketch illustrates. So we put this in there, you know, and again, it demonstrates, that we're well aware, and it also demonstrates that there is regulations, right, with respect to areas, right, and the requirements, right? You can't fly, less than 1,000 feet ASL in these areas. Next slide. Yeah, and this talks again about, turbine-equipped helicopters. And as everybody knows, we do allow helicopters to come in and train for good reason. In fact, there was a press release, I don't know if everybody's seen it, but it started last night. That said helicopters are training last evening, tonight, tomorrow night as well, three nights. From 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. in the morning. And, you know, we've authorized that for good reason. And they're training for night vision, not only for air ambulance, but also for firefighting now. Maybe you guys picked it up on Czech News a couple weeks ago. Ascent, they had a really good story, Czech News, on Ascent helicopters. They had some really good film work there. They were out in the country area. They were putting out fires at night. They showed that. So, you know, it's new technology in firefighting, and you know what? And I think it's inevitable. One day we're going to need that service. We're going to have a fire, right? We already know that we have, you know, a number of medevacs that come in here at night, and these guys and gals need to be trained. I think Ascent Helicopters have 8 new pilots they've hired each up. They've ordered like 6 or 7 brand new helicopters for that medevac contract they have with the province. So they've been awarded a 4-year contract with Alberta, but you know, it's a provincial American kind of what do they call it, Jeff? The Northwest Compact. So basically what it is an agreement between some states down south and some of the western provinces. And it's a compact so that there's resource sharing, right? So yeah, they've got a contract right now with Alberta, but when the crap hits the fan here in DC, you know, all resources could come from all those provinces, including the United States, to help out DC in an extreme event, right? So, So yeah, so that's one of the things that are happening. So we just wanted to put that in there as well. You know, for the most part, there are people that just don't understand it. Why can't they go to the Nihon and train? Why can't they train out in the bush? Well, they need to train in controlled airspace. Well, not controlled airspace, but controlled conditions. And the airport is a controlled condition, right? Where if something happens, they're hovering over the runway, you know, hopefully they can safely land, as opposed to doing it in a gravel pit, for example. It just doesn't work the same, right? But I'm certainly not telling you guys anything you don't know. So, next slide.
Just to that, you know, on the helicopter piece, and I don't know whether or not Ken Needham from Aerosmith Search and Rescue can help you, but we are actually hoist and fixed line certified now with Ascent for our extractions when we do rescues off mountain areas or forests. And when we have to do nighttime extractions, we actually have to call in North Shore Rescue Talon helicopters. And this is why it's so important to get Ascent certified for nighttime operations here on the island for those rescue extractions.
That's a really good point. Thank you for sharing that. So this speaks to the noise abatement procedure. Most people are aware, but, you know, just in talking with some of even the local pilots, we had a couple that, you know, they weren't really aware of, you know, they actually thought that they had to go at 1,000 feet ASL to turn to the south, for example, right? And no, this only applies to north turns, right? Turns to the south can be done at any time when safe to do so. Next slide. So this talks, and this is another map that Jeff put together. Thank you, Jeff. And it shows the noise abatement procedure, right? Sea nautical miles out, jetted runway, and or 1,000 feet above sea level, okay? What we would like to do is we'd like to post these maps at the flying club. We'll make a large map, public map. We'll just post it in the flying club and stuff like that, just for information, more than anything, right? So the Good Neighbor Program recommends and encourages members of the community to contact and provide feedback regarding noise disturbances within the surrounding community. And again, we extend that olive branch, so to speak, to the community so that, yeah, we're listening to you. But in most of our responses, basically, well, really not much we can do, right? Good noise, right? We don't control noise. Okay, we run an airport, and all airports get the same complaints, right? Whether they be noise or whatever they may be, but most of them are noise, right? Why does the plane have to fly over my place? Why can't it fly over somebody else's factory? Well, it doesn't work that way, right? Okay, unless you have an ANAP in place, which we do. Everybody knows that, right? Okay? So, you know. And again, most of our complaints are coming out of the west over fallen woods, right? So, you know, if we can speak to our stakeholders and our pilots through the program like this and say, you know what, this is our recommendation, I'm safe to do so, you know, turn south. If you can avoid those residential areas, perfect. If you can't, you need to make those decisions, right? That's not what this is all about, right? It's just more PR. Right? So, next slide. And you know who those two guys are. I don't like that picture, but Jeff was, okay?
It's airplane.
So, let's hear that.
You can get them out from the back door of the porta potty. So, while they're on the back
there, there you go.
They do that.
Right? I can read when they're...
One of the other things that we've just ordered up is we're putting a 50-inch TV screen in the terminal, right in behind the airline on the wall there. And we're going to use it for a number of things. We're going to run this. We're going to use it for, you know, maybe opportunities for revenue advertising for the airport. You may want to, you know, put your skydiving stuff. Things like that, right? We just think you know what, we got to get up to speed here and get into 20%, right? All airports, as you know, they have this technology except for us, right? So that's on its way. In a couple of weeks, we should have that installed, hopefully, and then we'll just run it from there. So that's a good positive thing. But any questions on the Good Neighbor program? So I'm going to be taking this to council on June the 19th. So out of the process that council went through on the consultation process, one of the things that again came up, and I know I'm repetitive, is, you know, you need to start listening to us and stuff like that. The council said, well, we are. How about this? So council agreed that they will have open houses, right? Biannually. So the next one will be June the 19th here at South Hall, okay, and it's committee of the whole. So it's an opportunity for the public, stakeholders to, you know, come and speak about vehicle, right? And I throw this out there, and I'm going to continue to do it with everybody because I think it's super important that the stakeholders, you guys, come to these meetings, right, and start talking about the benefits of the airport and what it provides, right, because it provides a lot of benefit to the community, you know, everything from an economic to a social, you know, to, you know, medevacs, firefighting, to search and rescue, all of that stuff, right, you know. I think we all know and can agree that if something was to happen, you know, earthquake or a major event in our area, you know, the airport might be the only thing that's really there and will become a triage, so to speak, right? More so than it is used now. Things like that, right? So I just throw that out there. The meeting is, I think it's at 4 o'clock on June the 19th. And it's a committee of the whole meeting, okay? And it's a super important meeting, and, you know, council wants to hear from people.
And is it just about the airport, or is it just multiple?
Just about the airport, yeah. So I'll be putting together a covering report for council, and I'll be presenting this Good Neighbor program as well at the meeting, okay? So that'll be the first time that the public will actually see the Good Neighbor program. Okay. Some of them know that we've been, you know, putting something together, but they've never seen it. Just in our correspondence, our feedback, we basically say, yes, we're working on, you know, different initiatives, so to speak, and the Good Neighbor Program is one of those initiatives, right? So this will go public, it'll go live after that, we'll be putting it on our website. So, do I have...
Trying to put in the airport.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Is it possible to get the reminder of that meeting to the committee, like for this committee, like an email, all that?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah. We'll send out a blanket email to all the stakeholders, yeah.
Okay. So, fine if you're not
So, thank you, Jeff. The other thing was we were got some improved signage. And it should be here, we're hoping, by the end of this week. Let me see the back of it there.
Yeah.
See if you can go down.
There we go.
There we go. So, we've got a little happy face in the corner there where it says on each side, let's keep our neighbors happy. Please follow the noise abatement procedures. For details, refer to the CFS. So these signs, our intentions are to put these three signs at the aviation fuel, these three signs at the Jet A fuel, and then the pilot and the runway 11 at the holding line at 11, and then the pilot and the runway 29 at the holding line at 29. And basically, it's just, again, it's just communication, right? You know? And not necessarily for people that are well-versed with Baldwin Beach, but maybe people that are coming in, you know, for lunch or whatever the case may be, right? Years ago, what they used to have, and I don't have it up on the screen, but it used to say, I'll just read it, it had a happy face. It said, pilots, keep our neighbors happy, please follow the noise abatement procedures, period. And then it said, runway 29, it said, climb runway heading the rail parade tracks, then climb heading 252 degrees when safe. Well, we can't do that because that's a regulation, right? And we're not quite sure, is that regulation actually in place, Jeff, back in those days?
It was, and you guys have been flying for a while. It was one of those please do noise abatement procedures that was in the CFS 14 years ago. It had no legal authority behind it. Quite a few airports had them. Transport went across the country, took them a few years, and they got rid of them, and they required us to go through the noise abatement procedure. So the NAP, there's a big long process to get one approved. We did it, as you guys all know, 10, 12 years ago, and it's the NAP that we have now. But this is the recommendation that turns out as soon as you're comfortable. Knowing full well you don't have to, but we're saying if it turns out, it'll make everybody happier.
So this is what we've come up for new science. Like I say, it's been ordered. It should be here by the end of the week. And we'll be installing this as soon as it comes, right? So you'll see this science. And once it comes, we're going to be taking a picture of it once it's installed. And we'll put another slide deck in the PowerPoint that you guys just seen. And we'll put a little bit of verbiage to that. And then that'll complete the PowerPoint, right? So. And again, it's like Jeff said, it's just a recommendation, right? That's all it is. So, okay.
But it shows an effort.
It shows an effort, exactly, right, Gordon? It shows an effort.
Most pilots put in.
You know, and there comes a point, and I think we're there, there does come a point where we say to the public, this is what we've done, and that's pretty much all we can do, mm-hmm. right? We're, you know, and they may agree or disagree, and that's up to them, but, you know, there's only so much you can do, right? And I know that the mayor and council see it that way now, that, you know, in some of the discussions we've had, that, you know what, you know, thank you to staff and you know, the people behind the scenes who have been doing things. He hasn't done a lot, and we have done a lot over the last year and a half. And there's only so much for to say that we can do, right? You know, there comes to a point where you just, it becomes repetitive, and it's the job we do, but we just can't do the more, right? The airport will never close, right? Can't change the configuration of the runway, as has been suggested by some members of the community. Just can't do it, right? You know, and we want to see the airport improve, right? And hopefully we will get a master plan, okay? So that, you know, can help move us forward, right? So any questions on that?
It's probably not a good time to talk about negotiations and questions.
No.
Any word on the trees?
John Craig, yeah.
Claudia, find trees?
So the trees. So I'll be working towards that. I've already started, and that's all I can share with you. But I'm optimistic that we're going to have something in place here, and hopefully the trees, I'm optimistic that they will be addressed by this time next year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Back to the agenda, I think. So could I ask for, as part of the minutes, could I ask that that the committee endorse the Good Neighbor Program?
Absolutely.
Who is that? Whatever.
Right.
Am I hearing a yay yep. across the board?
You bet.
Thank you, everybody. Round table.
Kevin, I have one question on the new fuel systems, and I was part of the disaster preparation program in Port Alberni in the event of the tsunami and stuff. Has there been any thought to emergency generators in place to activate and maintain fuel access in the event? We look for power, we can't get fuel, and the airport is going to be an obvious hub for any evacuations or any emergency arrivals and that kind of stuff. The aircraft are going to need fuel, whether it's an Enertech type generator at each pump, or if one will service both pumps, or has there been any thought put into that at all with the new systems that went in place?
So it's a really good question. Thanks, Brian. So we have been talking about a staffing level, and we're going to be putting it in for the 2025 budget for a generator that will operate the entire airport, which would include the fuel systems, the terminal, and the lighting systems. Runway lighting. So the whole works.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that'll be going into the budget for council's consideration this fall.
The only addition to that would be some kind of an emergency communications type of system to go in to coincide with it, if the funding is ever available for something like that, or if it's a wild thought or too far out there at this point.
So what would that look like, Brian, in terms of emergency communication? So if we're powered up, we should, I guess, I assume we should have communications, or am I missing something?
Well, you're not missing anything, I don't think, other than some sort of air-to-ground communications. I mean, the Unicom frequency certainly works for the local traffic, but if there's any additional FM communications that need to be, should be considered to be in place as far as coordinating anything for, you know, multiple arrivals, parking, and all the rest of that, as far as, you know, just different radio frequency availability, longer range radio frequency availability as well. It's some form of a tower or a base station or something to make us, the airport, just much more usable and accessible to be able to contact to, for instance, Aerosmith search and rescues or FM frequencies and that kind of stuff, RCMP of high frequency and that sort of deal. Because you lose our power, and basically you're going to lose your cell towers, you're going to lose everything at the same time. So this is why we discussed that Port Alberni just years ago, and you know, if you can't talk, you don't know what's going on the next block, sort of thing. If we can become, you know, at least situated so that there's some sort of a command center situation with just a simple base station at the Falls Beach Airport.
Okay, yeah, no, fair enough. Does the search and rescue, are you guys, do you have a generator already?
Yeah, we have a generator at the new hall, and we have special booster packs as well for radios, and we'll run as long as we have fuel.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But what frequency band are you guys using?
I have to go and look at the discrete frequencies right now because we're calling them EMBC1, EMBC2, and we're on the Mosaic frequencies, and we've got a channel as well that patches us in to
154 is generally up to the high 170s, Joe.
Okay. All the town vehicles are on an FM.
Yeah. It's that same frequency band range, and then there's toning that's set up for it.
And the fire trucks and the RCMP.
Yeah. It's not enough. See, they're up in the 400s, so that's another whole system in itself.
But if we had backup power, then options are wide open.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's just a base station, handheld, and Canada even does it. Just to make the airport, I mean, if it does become a hub, a center for evacuation or whatever, then that.
Well, it could happen when we had the fire at Cameron Lake.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that was a small version of it.
The Forest Service has theirs in place over there. We had our own up on top of Mount Aerosmith. There's multiple options out there, but you got to be able to get to hit them, right? So you have to have the radio equipment to do so.
Yeah.
So wouldn't a lot of that be managed through the emergency management Oceanside?
What's that?
Like the frequencies and organizing who's doing what and whatever else, and kind of something draft or whatever, isn't that all?
The town would be a joint. It would be a joint effort, right? Okay. Between municipal governments, the provincial government, possibly the federal government.
But EMO, isn't that fault in the partial emergency management Oceanside?
Just to let everybody know in the panel there, at in our office at Escuela Air, we do have an air band base station with a mounted antenna that could suffice if we had power for an emergency situation. So that just runs 230, which is the 228, which is the vocal frequency. So
yeah, other high step above that, Kevin. Like it's there's low bands, low UHF, mid bands, and then the ultra high.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just a matter of a radio and an antenna compatible with it. But I'm just suggesting that in the event of one of these emergencies, you need power to get fuel, to get people in and out in aircraft fuel, then we also need some sort of, there's going to be a requirement for some sort of communication.
Absolutely. I'm just saying it's here, but just on the radio frequency. I mean, my first thought to Brian there is on a roundtable side is the Coastal Fire Center has so much resources just down the road from us. I can't believe that we couldn't tap into something like that. But
if you tap into it with radio capabilities, right? Like our aircraft figures don't go in there. You have to have the FM band to stop search and rescue and stuff. It's just a matter of programming.
Part of the problem with the emergency response network as it relates to fire, police, and then when you look at the municipality, a lot of the radio bands and the radio systems that they're on are not interoperable. They're all separate bands, and police and fire channels are still, some of them don't talk to each other still, and they're restricted in most cases.
You know, when we put our airport emergency exercises together, that's what we run into all the time.
Yeah.
The fire trucks right now, if they're coming airside, they have to stop in the electrical room and pick up an air band.
Yes.
So they don't have one of their trucks, don't talk here on the aviation frequency. And the RCMP are on a different frequency again. So that's the constant issue in big picture emergency, not just airport.
Yeah.
I think Jeff, we've been like that. You know, what's available in terms of communication between them?
Oh, that comes up all the time in our emergency exercises. And it's been a problem for years. And as I said, the fire trucks have to pick up an air band radio. They don't want to keep one, because then be responsible to charge it and everything else. We look after charging it. It sits in the terminal building, and they pick it up. If we're on site, and we're the air band radio guys. RCMP are on a different frequency again. And if the RCMP are by themselves on site, they have no comm with aircraft. So if you see a flashing light, probably don't land. You know.
So I guess we could carry on having those conversations with emergency services and see if we can improve. But
this is not something new by any means. The big one, Brian, I totally agree with you, is we've got to have electricity before we can do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're dead without, if you can't access fuel, there's no use anybody coming here.
Yeah, fuel lights and
Yeah, exactly. We're actually, we're improving the workyard fueling station as well for that reason. Our CAO is really keen on ensuring that, you know, our infrastructure can support, you know, these types of events moving forward. So thanks, Brian. That's going to be going forward, like I say, in the 2025 budget.
Confirm it, but I think Qualcomm, the only place in Qualcomm that has an emergency generator right now is the Civic Center. And they just replaced that a few years ago.
Yeah.
There was a discussion about taking the old one and bringing it out here, but I think Arnold looked at it, and the reason it was being replaced is we didn't want to go here.
So there's one at Town Hall, there's one at the Civic Center, and of course the fire department. They have a generator, right?
Yeah, and we have one at Aerosmith as well, because they're looking to be part of that support infrastructure. Should we?
Yeah, because then the offensive is after the fire hall of the designation for EOC.
Yeah.
For the community here. But again, it's quite probable that the airport will be supporting any EOC in the event of, you know, something really, really bad. So, roundtable, compare anybody else?
No, we're getting going and waiting for good weather and today and onward and upward. We're excited about the new fuel system and hoping that it helps alleviate some of the challenges we've had in the past as we get into the
day. Yeah.
We're excited about that.
So it's you know, when you look at where we were, I mean, this was before my time, I haven't been here that long, but when you look back, some awesome improvements. You got two brand new fueling systems. Your lighting system is all up to speed. If we get new equipment, that'll be great. If we get the rehabilitation on the pavement, that'll be, you know, that'll be incredible. I think we're moving forward in the right direction.
Absolutely. And I think it helps to have more concerted attention from the town. Having you in a position where, you know, a few days a week, you're focused on the airport as opposed to somebody else who can only put a couple hours a week into it.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely helped
in. One thing I think I mentioned at UConn is that NAV Canada has taken over all our instrument approaches. This all won't affect most of the people here, but it's another step. They're bringing the LPO here. Not the LVA. GPS approaches with vertical guidance.
Yeah.
Gone?
Kevin may have gone.
Okay.
Yeah, he's, I think he's
from half Canada. We still can't get below 500 feet minimums, but that's because of the airport, you know, the trees and everything. But NAV Canada is building, GPS approach to the vertical guidance down to 500. So it's a big step up from what we've done now.
Anything else anybody wants to add or share?
With the new fuel system, will we be running out of fuel again this year?
Yeah, 10,000 more liters.
Okay. But is it just a matter of...
We haven't actually run out of fuel for about 2 years. What we've had is the system failure. That's where you read that a few weeks ago where some young man from Pitt-Hendles rolled the hose up and shammed it solid. And it seems to me one of your guys on day.
Otherwise,
a few weeks before that, one of our guys did it again. Mm-hmm. So the whole fueling mechanics... they're being replaced. It's being replaced. Hopefully, it'll be a little more foolproof than the one we've had there. Well, the one that's there now is 30-odd years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's old.
Yeah.
It's amazing how well
it's gone. We don't run out of fuel. If we run out of fuel, the system's out of fuel. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like if Pelican Beach runs out of ab gas, that means there's no ab gas in the mine.
Well, we did a handful of times last year. We had to fly all day, and then I
would
get fuel.
I think
we're going to fully. Wait a minute. We don't get our fuel from the Nanaimo Airport. We get it from the Nanaimo Fuel Supply.
Yeah.
The Nanaimo Airport, you know, the Vancouver ran out of fuel a little while ago.
Yeah, I think our threshold is around 10,000 liters, and then we're getting another load. Right?
Yeah.
So they're...
Okay.
Right.
Plus, it's 10,000 more. Yeah. 30 instead of 1.
Yeah, it's a QG pod system, much... I guess one thing that we can add is we're getting they're working on it right now, a new CCTV system. This one is old. Imagery is not that good, kind of, you know, gray. So we're getting a new system, and that'll be installed as well. Probably over the next month, we're hoping, a month or two. We'll have a new camera system as well. If that's all, thanks everybody.
Bad news, Brian, you can't have your hanger back. The guys love the hanger.
But he failed.
good to see everybody, and yeah. But again, please calendarize June the 19th. Okay, committee of the whole meeting here at Council Chambers.
Yeah, if we can get a reminder, I'll forward that to our board at Aerosmith and see if we can get some members down there to talk to the people.
We will get that information out.
Good stuff.
Thanks, Matt.
C-Lab, no comments today?
Nothing for C-Lab? All good? Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank
you. So,
yes, can I have a motion to adjourn, please?
Or send me to a